It's not a rant, it's Articulate Warbling with Zach and Laura.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, it is I, Zach Ferguson. This is It's Not a Rant, it's Articulate Warbling with, I've just said my name, well, I'm not going to say it again because that's just very egotistical, with
me, Laura.
Laura. And it is It's Not a Rant. It's Articulate Warbling presents
All Sorts
number
two. That's what I just did.
You just did it. So
no, I meant the number two.
You just did the number two. Yeah. Everyone wants to know that. Did it slide out smoothly? Or?
It's fucking huge.
Oof. So no designated toilet at work then. It's now you're comfortable shitting within a certain distance to me.
Yeah, like I don't need to shit at work anymore because I can shit at yours and I can shit at mine.
Mm.
Anyway, so
it's been a weird intro, hasn't it? It's taken like 3 tries.
Yeah, basically because I had a little bitch because I wanted to introduce it. Then I got a little bit
microphone shy,
and Zach was taking the piss.
Oh, well, I was just giving you the room.
So instead of introducing it, I'm going to tell you what we're going to talk about. And we are going to talk about the 2 latest films that we've seen at the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
The first being the controversial The Hunt.
Oh, so controversial. I just want to say it's not a good representation of my people. Bing.
And the second being the underdog, I think.
Especially on this podcast, considering that the episode that we are doing, like previously, I did a macro review where I was having an existential crisis whether I was giving The Invisible Man its due diligence.
You just told everyone the name of the bloody film. I was going to be like all tense and like, what are they going to talk about?
What are we going to talk about?
You're a divvy.
I've got a really bad memory. What?
You're a divvy.
Oh, I didn't know. I'm not psychic. I don't know that you're going to go.
But
do
I can't
it anyway.
Say it.
Do it anyway.
I can't say it.
Do it anyway.
I can't say it, can I? Because otherwise they'll hear me. And if I go to you, Zach, don't tell them that it's The Invisible Man. Then they're going to know that
do
it's
it.
The
do
Invisible
it anyway.
Man.
Pretend that didn't happen.
Right, that did not happen, okay, guys? So we're going to review 2 films. The first, I've just said, is the controversial The Hunt. And the second being the underdog of films, The Invisible Man. See?
Where is he?
Much more tense. Much more beautiful.
Where is he? Which I've already semi-reviewed on my own in my solo episode.
I keep telling him, stop reviewing things without me.
Yeah, well, it was a little existential crisis between, is it I had an issue with the cinema-going experience, cinema etiquette, or the film? And I was wrong in my summation that it was the film.
The bottom of your feet are disgusting.
I know. That's what happens when you wear Crocs.
I mean, I've been out without shoes on and they're not that disgusting.
I'm sorry. Would you like to lick them clean?
Would I fuck?
And we play that music. On hold. Oh, Laura. Oh, no, my hangnail. Anyway.
On your toe?
Yeah, hangnails on your...
I've never had a hangnail on my toe. No, I get them on my fingers all the time and I rip them out. No, I've had verrucas though. Well, I suppose that's kind of a corn because I had so many
was
blisters.
Was it you who sorted out my infected toe?
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah, that was
what
you.
What do you mean, was that you? Who the fuck else is it going to be?
My mummy.
Who needs a mum when they got a Laura?
Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm joking. Anyway, so The Hunt.
Yeah, The Hunt.
So, I don't do horror movies. Now, I keep saying this, right, okay? And it's not really a horror movie, blah, blah, blah,
but
it is.
Because of
Blumhouse, it's Blumhouse, blah, blah,
yeah.
blah, blah, blah.
So, 2 Blumhouse films, actually.
Yeah, so how many times have I said on this podcast I don't do horror movies?
But you always end up repeating a horror movie or talk about a horror movie.
So maybe... I
think they're growing on you a little bit.
Maybe I'm a little bit converted. Any who's?
Well, the thing is, you like picking them apart, so maybe that's why it's a good thing now that you want to watch them so you can pick them apart.
Yeah, no.
I was just shot down.
Do you want some aloe vera for that burn?
Oh, it really hurts, especially around my rim.
Oh, turn over then.
Oh no!
I'll put
Anyway.
So, this podcast all is a fucking mess.
All sorts of depravity going on today.
So, yeah, I don't do horror movies.
Horror movies?
It's not okay that we've watched as many horror movies as we have. But, yeah. You know, we're going to carry on the way we carry on. And so, Zach enticed me into watching this film because he went, Donald Trump banned it. And I went, let's do it.
Yeah.
Because, and that's the only reason why we got my mum to go and see that film. Mm. Is purely because Donald Trump actually banned this movie. And I just thought anything that was banned by Trump had to be watched.
Well, now in the wake of the film's release, they are now all poo-pooing that and saying it's a market strategy. No, it wasn't. Trump got on his high horse as usual, was deeply offended, based upon a trailer, based upon a concept of what the film could be.
Do you know what I was most gutted about? Was not a single one of those characters had a really bad fake tan.
And none of them wore that American make America great again cap. Because the film, though it's very political, it doesn't take sides and it's very apolitical. And the studio decided also it was a recent controversy that there was a mass shooting in America that was lined up with the release. And hand in hand with that, they kind of just went, okay, let's put it for respect. Also, Trump then put his oar in and felt the need to tell everyone that I'm having this movie banned because my supporters are not like that and I do not believe in the conservative government. Anyway, long story short, the film just miraculously out of nowhere...
Sorry.
Out of nowhere, about 3 weeks ago, was advertised.
It was.
With all of the quotes coming from people online opposed to the movie, in of itself, they are satirising the mythology and the controversy surrounding the film in the marketing leading up to it. Now, this film's not going to make its budget back, it's not going to make its money back because of what's happened recently and also with how quickly and a split decision they've said let's pull it out. But it's here, we saw it whilst we could.
There were quite a few people in there though, to be fair.
For what a small film and it was, but I think that was the niche audience. Like the majority of the people in there were wannabe skinheads, wannabe Bourgeoisists.
Wannabe Nazis.
Yeah, all that type of... And
but the most hilarious viewer in all of that entire screen was the lad that was sat next to you who had his head in his hands about halfway through the film, purely because I think he just didn't get it. And that was hilarious. That was more funny than the film itself. Because you could just see he was so bored because he just did not understand.
Well, people go in assuming this is one of your survivalist films. It is. Or it's one of your horror films. Is and isn't. It's a satire.
It's funny. It's like a scary movie.
Except it doesn't have crass, redundant and lewd, crude jokes. It does, but there's a difference. It isn't a spoof movie of other genres. It is a spoof of society and what is happening politically. So it does have that sensibility of what you'd get from a movie that is just spoofing everything, aping everything.
Yeah, and it is a survival movie in the sense of you are kind of on the side of the main character that you don't realise is going to be the main character because you're not introduced to her and Zach is taking his clothes off.
I am. I want to get comfy for this.
The main character is not the person you expect it to be and you don't get introduced
that
to her.
That happens literally 3 times. You're misled to believe 3 different people on the main character.
I know. But do you know what's funny? She's the second person you ever see.
Mm.
Do you realise that? Because she's over the lake.
Yeah, she's really fleetingly, isn't it?
Yeah. She's the one that rubs the needle against her hair and puts it on the leaf in the lake.
The one who, yeah, you know straight away that she's got a...
She's got a bit of nouse.
She's got nouse.
Anyway. I've lost my train of thought.
Why?
All you're going to be able to hear is banging. My door bangs, rattles so much when anybody moves in my bedroom.
The hunt rhymes with Donald Trump. So, let's go back to the film. What did you go in expecting, really, overall?
Um, around.
Just like appreciating my dad bod.
Wrong way around. Yeah, I'm just a little bit confused because usually we start a podcast comfy, and you've done it midway through, and I'm confused.
I think that's the appeal of the podcast. Really, we're just doing our thing.
So, where was I?
What kind of episode is this? The title of it and the content, the overall conception of it, we have room to. It's permissible, this behaviour, because it's all sorts. The hunt, the woman, the main character.
That you don't realise is the main character because you think that the main character
gonna be Emma
is going to be
Roberts.
That silly cow that you start off with, and I can't fucking stand
it. It's funny because it misleads you because you have her, and then there's this really gorgeous man.
And you think, like, oh, just hero. For a minute there, and then he dies.
Yeah, that as well. It leads you into a full sense of security, and then it does. It has no.
I thought it was going to be more of a like a gang thing. Like, I thought they were all going to come together and be like, right, let's fight this,
like that, didn't they? Yeah.
Let's fight this together, and then all of a sudden,
it subverts all of that, and it's cleverly orchestrated. Whilst it is satirical and it's got humour and it is a little bit lo-fi and deliberately shot. I think it's shot crappily in certain moments just to get that aesthetic and design and style.
Yeah.
And it leads you into these false senses of security, but that the sequence that really settles you in with the content of it is that woman who falls into the pit of stakes, those knives, those swords.
And then she gets out and you think, well, she's not going to survive. So
the handsome man saves her.
What was the point in even saving her? And then she gets blown up and she's like, give me the gun!
She's like, don't be a snowflake, and she's got her guts and intestines and her spinal column all mangled. It's just half that. It sets that tone straight away. But the main lead is Crystal. She's apparently it slowly unravels that these people are what you would deem right wing supporters.
Yeah, I'd say.
And those who are perpetrating them are conservatives, the type of people who would never do anything like this, but because they're elitist, they probably will. And the thing is, the film has no affirmed loyalty to any party. It basically says you're as bad as each other. This labelling, this whole personification and labelisation and gentrification, it has no place here. This is politically incorrect. These attitudes and behaviours are wrong on either side. Like when you get the group of the conservatives, quotation marks, or the left leaning, and they're so specific and they are very snowflakey, overtly sensitive. That bald man with the glasses is like, oh, I'm sorry, I male gendered that conversation. It's just funny. It's just so spot on with its particular gags and jokes and what it picks up on. And Damon Lindelof, who has always been a very, very masterful, clever writer, script writer, and someone who subverts expectations, and a lot of his work can fall into that political angle of things. Him with his co-writer have crafted a very specific, very funny, very pivotal and relevant and concurrent thing and issue to do with social media, misinterpretation, decontextualization, miscommunication, and it does it all with this barrage of depravity,
barrage.
Guts, a barrage, barrage of
not
guts,
a barrage. I'm taking
guts, gore, bullets, jokes, larger than life characters that are so pantomimed that they actually personify the type of people that you see out on the social verse, or how they project themselves, or people in reality. It is just a very clever, strategically and minutely analysed and scathingly executed film. It's larger than life, it's ridiculous. I think some of the marketing behind it has benefited it, whilst also not benefited it, given away that one of the head actresses, like throughout the movie, she's this vague phantom, this figure, this cut-out figure at the head of it. And who is it? It's Hilary Swank. Well, we knew that because she was in the trailer. But other than that, I think the film is enthusiastically apolitical. It is. It has no loyalty. It may teeter to the left, to the right. It doesn't matter. It is just a joyfully hilarious. And this is the thing. It is, like we have this conversation before and we have it personally. Some people go to escape. Some people don't. This, for me, was a movie where I could escape for a little bit while still appreciating the broader connotations and contexts.
Yeah. 100%.
You can watch it on the value, but that young man next to me, I mean, he wasn't escaping anything. He wanted to escape. He did. Like, his girlfriend across from, next to him, across from me, was like, "What is it, babe? You need a wee? What is it? What, babe? Babe, just ask them. Just ask them to move." And he's like, he's literally like head in hands, and he's shaking, going, "No." His knee is juddering up and down. He's agitated. Poor little fucker didn't know what was going on.
Maybe he just needed a wee.
Maybe it was. I don't think so, because every time she reached out to comfort him, it was like that in denial thing of like, "Get off me. Don't touch me. I can't believe you dragged me to see it. I can't believe I'm going through this." And probably because he's not an unlimited cinema card holder, he actually paid to see it.
Oh, yeah, that would suck, wouldn't it?
But it's a good film. I would have paid for admission.
Yeah, I know, but if you're really bored, if you're sat really fucking bored.
Or maybe he expected that due to coronavirus it would be an empty cinema, and he had this set date in his head, and that he wanted to be noshed off whilst watching a horror movie. Because she came across as someone who might do that, and he looked like someone who was up for that.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
Also, there was a great issue behind me throughout the whole... Right there, mate. I just broke your neck. Oh. Cinema etiquette, ladies and gentlemen. It is a fucking thing, and this will segue beautifully into our next review, which I think Laura might be a little bit more invested in, because at the moment she's looking at picture frames on her Amazon app.
Okay, I'd just like to say that I'm looking at picture frames because I've just bought loads of pictures of us, and I want to make a collage of all of our photos so I can hang it on my wall.
Okay.
So it's cute shit.
Made me feel guilty now. Anyway, long story short, there is such thing as cinema etiquette, ladies and gentlemen. Just because a movie is a satire, or it's a dark comedy, or comedy in general, doesn't mean you have to laugh so fucking loud that the person in screen 19 that is at least 5 miles away, 3 stories up from you, can fucking hear it. It is not on. He was spitting down the back of my neck. He was slapping his thigh. I know that a lot of American audiences are like that, and that's why I'm never going to see a film in America. Because all you people do it, yeah, yeah, bitch, woo! No, just no, there is an etiquette to it. There's a certain volume. Certain movies and certain people think the cinema space and their genre and what they are, It gives you permission to be an obnoxious arsehole.
Yeah, basically. I mean, it doesn't. That's not... Your point is correct. Your point is right, but it doesn't mean that they should be able to do it.
No, for me, The Hunt is a... Since I've looked at it on a broader connotation, it was a 3-star film. It's veering towards 4 at this moment because I really did enjoy it and I can't wait to watch it again. So The Hunt, from me, gets 4 stars. I recommend you see it whilst it is out there. Also, whilst the cinemas are empty, or the theatres, or multiplexes, go see it, because it does offer a lot. It does. It's entertaining. Does, yeah. Yeah, it's funny. It is something you can watch with your friends. Just don't take liberties. Don't take the piss. You know, if something is funny, you're allowed to laugh. But kicking someone's chair, spitting down someone's neck, clapping your hands, whooping, like, amping yourself up. It's like, go to a rave, go to a nightclub, do it in your bathroom while staring at yourself in the mirror, contemplating how to behave in social spaces. Like, fuck me, I'm autistic, and I uphold the law of social etiquette better than all these fucking divvies.
Yeah, you tell them, baby.
Shut up. Yeah, well, the person in question, I had a little hunt of my own, didn't we? We got on that Nissan and we drove after him, and now he's in the cupboard. Yeah, you try and laugh now, bitch. Is that him trying to laugh, Laura?
No, I think he might be crying, baby.
Oh, I think he's just pissed himself. Ugh. Oh, you're disgusting. Anyway. How many stars would you give The Hunt?
3.
Right. Oh, can you look up the bookmark thing? Because I've been looking all day everywhere and I just can't find it.
Very, very, very expensive. I looked at it yesterday.
I saw one and it's like 50 for £24 off iBusy or Instaprints. They do 100 for £31.
It's quite a bit of money though, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. Anyway, contemplation aside, are you ready? Are you ready for it? Taylor Swift. No. Just no.
Yeah, I'm gonna wait till I get paid. Right, okay.
Now, hopefully a review that your heart might be in.
The Invisible Man.
Oh shit. What? No, we're okay. We're okay.
The Invisible Man. So there's some jump scares in this.
Like he was like literally on top of you, like touching you in places that I never knew existed would make you go like, get off her, Adrian! Anyway.
First time we go to Winter to see this, we got through an hour before going, fuck this. And that was purely because of social etiquette in the cinema. There were people that I had four girls next to me, and they jumped at the most ridiculous of places. And it was just really fucking inappropriate, basically. And it was just pissing me off. There were people chattering. There were people on their phones that were clearly too scared to watch the film. There were people laughing. There were people, like, going, oh, my God! Even though there was nothing to jump at. It was just too much. And, like, Zach just mentioned he's autistic, right? And autism comes with usually a symptom around sensory overload. And for this film, I genuinely felt for you at that point.
Yeah, it was really...
Because it was just too much. Because you've got the tension of the film itself, the noise of the film itself, and then these squealy little turds next to me just making the most inappropriate of noises. And I just thought, for fuck's sake, go away.
Yeah, thank you for actually like realising that. Not many people do. Like it is, it's very disconcerting because it's macro.
I get it. I really do get it because it could be hard enough just being at the cinema with the noise and the lights and the this and the that, but then to have squealy turds.
As soon as those lights go down and those really bright strobing red lights go down and the film starts, that's when I'm.
That's when you're okay.
That's when I'm okay because I'm invested. I'm ready to. Be taken away, and it's not. I don't expect people not to laugh. There's certain film experiences like you've probably had before where you have seen a horror film, and it's more effective by having people around you, the atmosphere, yeah. Certain reactions. You're in tune with each other. Same with comedies,
yeah. But this was not.
This was not. This was not. This was not that type of experience.
So anyway, like,
yeah.
The things that we'd seen in the first hour were all in the advert. I'd seen all of those jump scares.
Those moments.
In the advert.
Except the bacon and the eggs.
Except for the bacon and the eggs. And just to give you clarity, you guys, there's a jump scare in there where it's a scene change and it's really, really tense, and then it's seen in like the chain that it literally cuts to eggs and bacon frying.
Oh my God! Breakfast!
So.
Oh my God! Oh my God! Do you see that yellow yolk? Oh my God! Oh my God! All the girls, all that fizzling fat.
So a week and a half later, we go and try and see it again at 11:30 on a Sunday morning during the worst hit of coronavirus. Not the worst hit because everybody's dying from it, but because everybody's absolutely shitting themselves. Which for us is kind of perfect because it means the cinema is dead as fuck.
It is a pandemic of social
seclusion,
social seclusion, and social mental breakdown.
Meltdown, really.
Meltdown.
Which is bloody wonderful for us because it means we can go to the cinema and enjoy a film on our own, pretty much.
But
there were six other people in
that
cinema.
Yeah, and it shows those audience members that are there were mid to late 50s, 60s.
Yeah, they were, which meant that they weren't so jumpy and weren't so squealy and they weren't turd-like. Anyway.
They weren't malleable and squishy and turd-like. There was no people.
There was a Oh, no, that was Saturday night, sorry.
That was Saturday night.
just to give you another piece of context, person, and only I can do the is it's actually a facial expression that I think I'm going to have to record on video to actually give people some context, otherwise they're never going to understand
truly.
Really.
On Twitter, every future episodes, every time we go the experience, we'll just have Laura's.
We're going to have to post a video, and I will do a video, I promise. In fact, we'll do it after this podcast, and we'll get it up there so you can see it.
Do it now, get your phone up.
No, because I've got a double chin where I am now. But a is basically me kind of making my face into what I can only assume must be how the people who have an immense amount of lip filler must feel. And the noise, to me, is just a noise of just being repulsed by their lips, to be honest.
Well, the noise personifies the quackish-shaped lips, it really personifies the attitude of the, because it is a projection of ego, really, isn't it? Who's that with a mask on?
It's not, it's a joke, it's Scotty sending me loads of joke memes from coronavirus. It's a disc that says virus protection on it, and it's strapped around.
Oh, I've seen someone do that. Loads of people have done that. You're so funny.
Anyway, so there was no people, and what there was some sophisticated ladies and gentlemen in that screen.
Oh, yes.
And it was very good.
Now, Harry, and maybe in the heydays, I mean, he was like, sweetheart, you don't need to do that because I don't find blowjob lips that attractive anymore.
Exactly. But yeah, so this film went from a jumpy horror to an immensely awesome psychological thriller.
Mm-hmm.
It was so fucking good. Like, you're following
Elizabeth
actress name.
Moss.
Thank you. Of course it is. You're following Elizabeth Moss through a tense moment to begin with, aren't you? She's trying to get away from her abusive husband.
It's partner.
Were they not married?
No.
Oh, okay.
He wanted that. That's why he wanted her pregnant.
Oh, I see. Okay. So she's trying to get away from her abusive partner. They're living together. And you're getting
to... control over everything.
Yeah, total control. And you're getting to grips in those first few moments of how controlling he truly is. There's cameras everywhere.
And she is turning it on him because, you know, the full reason those cameras are there is to moderate what she is doing.
Yeah, exactly.
To control. So in a way, that turning of the camera is emblematic of that whole sequence.
Yeah,
I'm turning this on you now because I need to watch.
Not just to watch him to make sure she's safe.
Yeah.
But also to turn it on him, and like, look what I'm doing to you.
Yeah, and I'm not going to give spoilers, but something monumental happens out in the film where that literally happens in the finale.
Yeah. And I think it's just because you get to grips quite quickly, don't you, that, you know, you've got the cameras, it's a big house, it's very empty, there's no love in that house, there's no family
feel. It is clinical, it is sterile, it is scientific.
And then when you see the surrounding of this house is these, like, 8-foot...
Fortress walls, yeah.
Fortress walls.
Yeah.
And it's scary, man. It's in like the middle of
a
woods.
Far off location. Woods,
yeah, exactly.
A sea where you really can't, the ocean where you really can't escape.
And I think the thing is a lot of people go, yeah, that's your traditional, stereotypical horror. I'm like, no.
And there's so much more going on.
There is so much
more. Lee Whannell is a very fantastic scriptwriter and director, and you know that a lot of thought has gone into this.
And, you know, without going into any spoilers, because I seriously recommend going to see this movie. Watch for the dog bowl.
Tom Six is going, I came up with that.
But yeah, it's just you follow this character through trials and tribulations and this guy that may or may not
and
be
beyond
dead.
The grave. But and that I like that thing, that symbolic, that the brother who is also his lawyer and everything to do with his will, everything. There's this really great bait and switch where at first you think the brother's a bit hostile towards her, like do you know how many women have come across here and they want something from my brother, and he's hostile. And the second time she sees him, she's very sympathetic and goes, my brother's controlled me all my life.
And
it's that bait and switch of, oh fuck, and it's
this whole film fucks with you on a level you didn't realise you could be fucked.
Yeah, and that the notion that he says that this is only real because you're letting it be real. He is haunting you from beyond the grave. And if we didn't know by the specifications of what the story is, and we know that this man has the capabilities of creating a mecha suit,
invisibility cloak.
Yeah, basically an optric suit that refracts everything. In a way, it does delve into... At that point, that actor is so compelling, you do sit there and go, what if it is just her? Just her? What if it is just her agitation and the invisible man is what she's crafted?
Yeah.
Though we know it's got that scientific sci-fi specificity and the genre and where it comes from before, and we know he is the invisible man, those masterful displays, you could see where the film could go with that, because they could have turned it on its head and made out it was all in her head, but because paying tribute to what the story is and what it means and giving it a modern connotation with women being freer, being honest, being able to speak about the domestic abuse, the domestic life, the control, the misogyny, the sexism, the puritanism that males and modern men have to uphold. Now that's transferred into men being all open for women, but in a lot of ways it doesn't. You're just doing that to flag wave, whereas it's showing modern men are villains in a lot of ways, especially if you are privileged, especially if you have money.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it...
And it's taken so much, and the clinical element, and again, the psychological nuances, though it is a scientific, a sci-fi element to it, there's still that psychological trauma. Also, because we know the truth of the matter, we're on that journey with her, we're experiencing it with her. You want to scream at the screen, listen to her, believe her.
Yeah.
And to pull something off like that, sometimes it's hokey, other times it's not. This is masterfully crafted, and everything that I may have shot it down for or was blindly shooting the dark for when it came to not liking it due to my relation and my love for the original, I was basically shooting the dark, and I have to apologise to all involved, creators, writers, directors, producers. I did not give myself over to it, and I apologise, because I think this film is probably my favourite of the year so far.
I think...
Alongside Parasite and Birds of Prey, of course.
I think, personally... I was listening to what you had to say, and then I was like, yeah, I've got a really good thing to add on to it, and then it's completely gone.
Psychological element. The brother.
No.
Domestic abuse. Modern topics.
Got it. So, I've told everyone, and I've told you a million and one times now, probably, that I hate horrors. And I'm going to say it again, I hate horrors. Now, the reason why I don't like horrors is because in horror movies, all the characters do all the things that you absolutely would never do in any human situation ever.
Yeah.
And you always go, why would you go to that? Why would you do that? For example, Brightburn. Why would you go out into the garden in the pitch black? Why would you do that? Why would you go into a dark room and not turn the light on? Why would you do that? And this is what I love about...
Why would you go towards a weird clown?
Exactly. And this is what I love about this movie, is that actually, 9 times out of 10, the lights are on. Because they can be, because he's invisible.
Mm.
But I love that, because there was only one moment in this, there were two moments in this film which make it a 4-star film for me. Not a 5-star. The first moment is because there is a scene where she is literally thrown around the kitchen. And it seems too overdramatic.
It's from a completely different movie. The strength, the orchestration of the stunt, it is really forceful and overtly played.
Exactly.
Overtly stylized. It kind of unevens that bit.
Exactly.
It could have been done a lot more subtly.
The second
But I think
thing,
they wanted to show the power, but it
yeah.
does uneven it.
The second thing I don't like about this movie is when she goes up into the attic.
No, but I don't think that's a flaw. She is at this stage now where everyone around her is telling her, you are constructing this, and she is so motivated by proof, and it's also speaking up on a level of her character. She's been running away from him for so long, or wanting to, and if this distancing, she doesn't want to believe it that he's that close, but he is. And she's in the film, she's always backing away. This is the first time that she's going forwards and going, you know what, fucker, you know, the coffee ground she puts on to mark it out, she's got the knife, she's always backed in the corner. That is the first time where she's gone, you know what, I'm gonna seek him out. Though it's motivated by the phone, it shows a strength in her that I'm gonna catch you out.
Yeah, okay.
And that's why I absolutely loved it when she went up there. And then you think it's gonna be a jump scare, and then something happens where it's like, you know what, she's actually really clever, because she's gone along with your plans.
She's starting to figure it out now.
Yeah, she's gone along with your plans, yeah. So she can expose you. You've seen it in the trailer. She throws paint over him. So
which looks a lot like milk.
Oh my god, that was what I was gonna bring. It is milk. They have to use it, because if you actually use real paint, it's going to cost more to...
Yeah.
So they do usually... It's either PVA glue, because it's easier
PVA
to...
PVA would have been better.
PVA, you can clean up easier. Paint, you can't.
The thing is, with milk...
And how many takes do you have to do? How many takes do you believe that they had to do to...
Far too many. But the thing is with milk, and this is the thing I did struggle with a little bit, is the milk on the floor looks a lot like milk.
Spilt milk it is.
But... when it goes over him, it's more sticky.
Yeah, that's because it's CGI.
Me. But that frustrates me.
They should pull you out, though, because that moment, it speaks and it's so good.
No.
Also, it gives you the look at the suit, finally, not in its full beauty.
Yeah, but it's not right, because you think it's paint, and then it's milk.
But have I, in a way, given a little bit of weight and a little bit of meaning behind why she went up there, because you see that she's moving forward, but
yeah,
she's playing into his scheme, but she's only done it really so she can turn around and go, I've got you now.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And Elizabeth Moss, I've never been a fan of her as an actress, maybe because her personal life has maybe corrupted me a little bit with her mentality and her thoughts on certain issues, but she's a sensational actress. This film is with her majority of the runtime, and she is, you can feel it. There's so much behind the eyes, in the facial features, in the physical carrying off. She is superb.
She is
superb in this role. And it's not that cliched, I'm gonna be a strong, independent, masculine woman.
No.
She's strong on her own. She uses her wits, her intelligence, her experience.
Yeah, 100%.
She pieces everything that's happened to her so far up to this point where you find her in the film. Mm. Sensational acting. The man, I need to know his name. The man who takes her under his wing. The friend of the family.
Okay,
and
yeah.
His daughter.
I'm on it.
Is one of the most beautifully captured triangles of friendship, relationship, and real genuine... This man isn't after getting her knickers. He is there. He's a family friend. It doesn't play into cliche.
Yeah,
it's close with
their sister as well.
Close with their sister. He's got a daughter of his own there. And there's this sensational scene where we're led to believe that Elizabeth Moss's character,
Aldis Hodge,
is so fucking good in it. So what is Elizabeth Moss's character again? I keep forgetting.
Why isn't it going to tell me?
It usually does, doesn't it? So Elizabeth...
Cecilia Cass.
So she is in this moment where there has been some scary incidents that are either in a certain perspective, which it frames with everyone else around her, that she's kind of losing her mind. She is falling into...
Well, she gets... Yeah, I'm not going to say that because it'll probably spoil it.
Yeah, she falls into, God, I didn't expect that to happen. I didn't see that happening. I didn't see it going in that direction.
I did.
I didn't see her. I don't know why. I just didn't. Anyway, so there's this beautiful scene where the invisible man strikes her friend's daughter, who she's living with, and the young gal is just like stricken, like, oh my God. And you can understand why the young gal eventually comes to the conclusion that the woman's unraveled. She's found her in the middle of the bedroom or a room, shaking, tearing up. She knows that she's a bit vulnerable, and dad comes in, and there's this beautiful sequence where he knows she is, we all know she's been abused, it's referred to sexually, yeah, emotionally, yeah, violently, yeah. And there's a moment where you he's so fucking furious at the notion that I've taken you in under my wing in my home. But you've hurt my daughter. But I know you're still vulnerable. I know that this is coming from a place of your own hurt. And he puts his arm out, but it's in such a delicate, nuanced way. It's not, I'm a man, you fuck off, you hurt my daughter.
It's angry, but it's not aggressive.
No, it was like, I understand where you're coming from. I know that you're damaged. I know that you're striking out. But for this moment, I need to secure my daughter.
Yeah.
You need to go now. But it was done so... Oh, so beautifully. And I think moments like that show the acuity that actors have. You know that friendship, you feel that love, there is that resonance, and this is what's really good about it. It's so real that you connect with it. But that little moment is what is so brilliant about this movie. It's littered with relatable, realistic human traits, human characteristics. It's not overblown, it's not over the top, it's not fucking highlighted for you, it's not screamed at you. It is subtlety, it is nuanced of script, performance, direction. And just that moment where he says, look, I'm fucked off with you, and it's all in his body, his eyes, and he carries that performance throughout. That, like, there's moments where as a friend you look and you see a friend struggling, and you do, you go, oh, for fuck's sake. But there's that still that strength of, I do believe that you can do this. And he pushes forward for her. He really does. And he's always there for her. Even when certain things unravel later in the film. It's... The characters are so well-rounded.
It is, to quote Zac Ferguson, a masterpiece.
It is a masterpiece. It is. And I had an issue that when I first saw it, and maybe because I didn't give myself that way, because all these other distractions wouldn't allow me to flow with it. The clinical aesthetic, but so much more is going on. Like certain digits and numbers that are cast out onto passwords, there are references to release dates and things of previous Invisible Man. There's nods and odes and homages and little Easter eggs for fans of the Invisible Man, but it is an emblem of it. It is a modern movie. It is a modern adaptation of the Invisible Man story, but not in the sense that it's about a mad scientist who just wants to be invisible and cause lunacy. I absolutely love James Whale's 1933 original for what it is. It's a gothic, noir, camp, niche, ridiculous, fun film. This has given it a weight. It's lent it social. It's got a social commentary. It's coming from a place of reality. It's coming from a place of vital issues, things that are in the wake of the media, the enamouredness of how females are repressed. It shows the reality of toxic relationships, toxic masculinity, control, the psychological plateaus of corruption. And there's so much going on here visually, the clinicality of it, the pristineness, and it's the modern decor. It's minimalist, but it's so subtle. Later in the film, on screensavers and shots, you have illusions and little snippets of the texture of the suit that he's creating and that he's going to wear later in the film. So much is going on here, the design, the art direction. And I noticed in the house they were living, it was lifting. Like when she was sitting in the bathroom gathering herself, you have like, what do you call it? Black mould, like you had stains of where it showed the urban life. It wasn't Hollywoodized, it wasn't overplayed. Everything is just real. But those moments where she is attacked really brutally the first time, it throws you out for a moment.
Yeah, it does.
But everything is beautifully balanced, and I think I've warbled on enough on my end, and I think we should really wrap it up from you. I want to know, picking up from what I'm saying and what you may have to say for you.
I mean, for me, it was a fantastic film. I think the first hour, if you're bored, hold on.
Hold on, yeah.
Because that first hour is story building. Your character building, your story building, you're understanding the context.
You're weaving the threads, aren't you?
Yeah, you really are. And then it does just snap.
And the score by Benjamin Wallerfish.
Absolutely fantastic. The first hour is very much character building. You're getting to know the different characters. You're getting to know the story. You're getting to know the context, the background, the what's going on. How this is working, how the Invisible Man himself is working, the characteristics of the Invisible Man, all of those kind of
In and around him,
yeah, And the thing is you have to have that bit.
And he and is not bit, the focal point at all.
That bit is the first hour.
Mm.
Once you get through that first hour, my God, does it click. And it's just bam, 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 yeah. bam, 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 bam. And it is fast-paced, but it's fantastically fast-paced. Yeah. It's not that fast-paced as if it's like, oh, we've got an hour left, we have to rush through it now.
Mm.
It is fast-paced, and you are with it every single step of the way. You are literally just... every twist, every turn, you're with it. You're like, yeah, oh my God, I wasn't expecting that. What? Hang on a minute. And you almost want to kind of like go back to gather yourself, but it's not fast-paced in the sense of you totally lose it, but enough to kind of, it is to mess with you, to fuck with you, to fuck you in a hole you didn't know you had.
Mm-hmm.
It just wraps it up. And the ending, well,
also, the invisible man in question, he's not focal to it. And also, there are so many layers to this. Talking upon it made me realise, the actual invisible man of the story, is he really the actual invisible man? You've got to think about this. If you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. Also, the invisible man who isn't the invisible man, but is the invisible man, is he really the invisible man? Who is this invisible man? There is so much going on in this story. Not just like narratively, but psychologically, the parameters, the metaphor, the symbolism.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's, you know what? I said it was a 4-star film. I've got to say it is a 5-star film. I love it. It's really
still a 4-star film for
me. I just love it. Lee Whannell, please return. Because I'd be interested to see if anyone is going to take up a sequel. I don't want it to be Elizabeth Banks. I don't want it to be her. She hasn't got the capabilities as a director, nor as a... actress to pull off the type of thing that we have seen from Elizabeth Moss, and I think we've been spoiled by Elizabeth Moss, and no one can really live up to that. But also, I kind of don't want a sequel. I think this is strong enough on its own merits.
Yeah, I do absolutely agree.
So, Invisible Man, 5 stars from Zach.
4 stars from me.
So, imagine if someone wants our Articulate Warbling podcast, in quotes, on the cover in the future. We have to come in the middle. We have to agree on a rating. So shall we say 4? We say 4 from Articulate Warbling? 4 stars.
4 stars from Articulate Warbling.
Yeah. So that's The Invisible Man and The Hunt reviewed, and with some minor miscellaneous happenings. Shall we wrap that up?
I think we should.
Wrap this up? Anyway... thank you for joining us on It's Not a Rant, it's
Articulate Warbling.
And this was a all sorts episode. We'll be doing all sorts of all sorts in the coming future. But for now, we'll leave you with the sweet American intonations and tone of D.B. Spitzer. Take it away, Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Yankee Doodle Dandy. Thanks, Zach. You've been listening to Articulate Warbling with Laura and Zach. Tune in next time where they talk about more stuff. The show is produced in Brighton, England at Sweat Drenched Press and edited and produced at Badger's Drift Studios in beautiful, rainy Portland, Oregon. Links to where to find Zach in the show notes.